It's July 1974, and Alan Ross finds himself in Yosemite National Park. He's helping with a photo workshop. Among those leading the course is Ansel Adams, the world-famous photographer. Then, one day, Ansel asks Alan if he'd move to Carmel, California, to be his full-time assistant.
And I thought about that for a microsecond or two and started packing my bags.
From Interlochen Public Radio, this is The Green Room, where we talk about arts and culture in northern Michigan. I'm Dan Wanshura. Alan Ross worked with Ansel Adams for about 10 years. And like Ansel, he's known for his striking black and white photography. On July 13th, Alan will be in Petoskey giving a lecture on the life of Ansel Adams. He says a lot of people know about Ansel the photographer, but fewer know him as a person. You talk about him as this gregarious figure who never took life too seriously. Is there a story that encapsulates him?
Yeah, there is one that sticks in my mind particularly. Part of my job is to work in the darkroom with him. Ansel always made his own prints. In other words, but he always put the light onto the paper. And one day we were finishing up for the day, and Ansel had turned the enlarger off. I was still in the sink developing the last batch of prints that he'd done. And it was garbage day the next day, so he decided he would collect various paper and stuff like that we didn't need and started stuffing it in the garbage can. But it was fairly full. And Ansel was fairly tall, and he was able to just put a leg up and start stomping down on the trash can, and both Ansel and the trash can went head over heels onto the floor. And so here's Ansel rolling around the floor, you know, in sheets of wet photo paper and empty developer cans, and laughing to beat the band. He just thought, you know, it was very funny that had happened. You know, Ansel never really lost the ability to laugh at himself, which I think is something I wish a whole lot of other people could do.
Tell me, you know, he would practice a lot. He would experiment. You told me that one of your fondest memories with him would just be driving around Yosemite looking for places to take photos.
It was fabulous. I tried to do the driving so he could do the looking, and we'd be driving down a road someplace, and he'd say, whoa, slow down. I want to look at something. And I'd think, what in the world is he looking at? So I'd pull over, and he'd get out and start looking around and maybe compose the image by using his hands in front of his face. And then he'd tell me to get the camera out with such and such a lens, and he'd pull out this beautiful photograph. So being able to be part of how he saw things was really an amazing experience.
With all his practicing, how many would turn out good and how many would, you know, be garbage?
Rarely anything I would call garbage. Actually, I'm not sure I ever saw anything like that I'd call garbage, but he had boxes of prints and all equipment and stuff all over the house, all over out in the carport and stuff. And it was my job as a new assistant to make some order out of all of that. So I'm going through boxes and boxes of prints. And it was, for me as a photographer, it was very reassuring to see how many comparatively ordinary photographs he'd made in his life. But that didn't bother him a whit. He had no illusions about every photograph he might make being what he would call a Mona Lisa. He had no airs about him.
Ansel Adams had a music background. In fact,
yes.
You say at one point he aspired to be a pianist.
From very early years, he had intended to be a classic musician. By one connection or another, he wound up in New Mexico, met photographer Paul Strand. And something about meeting Paul Strand in 1930 really threw a switch for Ansel, that he was looking at some of Strand's negatives and just realized Strand's commitment to photography. And Ansel returned to San Francisco declaring that he was going to actually make his living as a photographer, not a musician. You know, Ansel's testing film and trying different developers and doing this, that, and the other thing was nothing more than playing scales. As a musician, he didn't want to get out on stage and hit a wrong note. You want to be in control of your art? You got to practice. You got to learn. You got to test this. You got to try things. That was really where Ansel's technical reputation came from.
When people think of Ansel Adams, they immediately think of black and white photos. He's kind of the gold standard in that regard. But back when he was shooting, there was color photography, but it wasn't always very practical, and the quality certainly wasn't what we have today. You, on the other hand, have access to much more technology, but I find it interesting you continue to shoot and develop your work in black and white. Why? What is it about black and white photography for you?
With color photography, a lot of the time you have a certain expectation of it representing reality. You know, if I show you a landscape with a green sky, you're going to say that's wrong. But with black and white, I can print the sky like Ansel, very light, very dark. I can change the contrast, and just by the virtue of black and white itself being an abstraction of reality, I find it very liberating in an expressive way.
That was photographer Alan Ross talking to me from his home in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Alan will be in Petoskey next Thursday giving a lecture about the life of Ansel Adams. It's at Crooked Tree Art Center. Also at the Art Center is the Ansel Adams Masterworks exhibit. It includes some of his most iconic images. For more information, go to our website, interlochenpublicradio.org. This has been The Green Room. Thanks for listening today. I'm Dan Wanchura, and this is IPR.